Jumping into our third hour, my name is Jim Rome. Welcome back, or a good afternoon to you wherever you are. Program's brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. If you're on hold, stay there. More telephone calls coming up later on. We're going to talk to Tampa Bay Lightning head coach John Cooper in the third segment of this hour. So 40 minutes past. Next segment's wide open, but as promised, we're joined right now by the driver of the number 19 car for Joe Gibbs Racing, 2017 Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series champion, two-time NASCAR Xfinity Series champion, four wins in 2018. He finished second in the standings, 16 wins in the last three seasons, co-founder of the Martin Truex Jr. Foundation. NASCAR, of course, kicking off its season Sunday with its Super Bowl event, the 61st Daytona 500. It's at the Daytona International Speedway. The race is 2:30 p.m. Eastern on Fox. Martin Truex Jr. is my guest. Martin, nice to have you on. How are you?
Hey, Jim. How's it going?
Good, bud. Great to have you back. Listen, whenever I have a boxer or an MMA fighter on, the fight or the show during the week of a fight, I always check and see how's your week going, how you feeling. So let me ask you this. With the Daytona 500 coming up this weekend, are you fired up and itching to go right now, or do you have a sense of calm about you?
I'm pretty calm. I've been, I think this is my 15th or 16th Daytona 500, so got quite a bit of experience and feeling pretty comfortable, pretty calm, and at the same time fired up about the new season starting.
All right, so Martin, what about this? I mean, as a NASCAR champion and a two-time Xfinity Series champion, you've raced in the most pressure-packed situations that there is. What is it about Daytona that makes it so unique and so special?
Well, I think it's just the history here, you know. I mean, NASCAR was born in Daytona. This is where it all started, and you know, to come down here and you know, the prestige of this race, the names who have won it, what it means to the sport, you know, got guys go throughout their career as known as a Daytona 500 champion. And that, you know, that's significant. And so it's a race I've been really close to winning, finished second by, I don't know, a foot or less in 2016. And, you know, hopefully this year it'll be our turn to win it.
Well, man, that's an amazing sound I can hear in the background of some cars going around. That's awesome. You know, as I've talked to drivers over the years, they see, Martin, like they're split on this. Are you able to approach the Daytona 500 like it's just another race? Or in the back of your mind, are you thinking it's the Daytona 500? It's not just another race.
I approach it that it's just not another race. And I feel like we come here and I don't. The only thing that matters here is winning. Second, I don't care to finish second. You know, of course, it's, you know, at other tracks, you might say, well, it was a good day. You know, we finished second, we got some points, move on to next week. Here, I feel like it's all about winning. Nothing else matters, and I completely separate this race from the rest of the season.
Martin Truex Jr. joining us. Daytona 500 is coming up this weekend. It is your first season with Joe Gibbs Racing. What has that transition been like?
Yeah, it's been really good so far. Feels comfortable. You know, I've known a lot of the people there. You know, our team the last couple of years has had a working relationship through Toyota with them, so I know a lot of the people and kind of how they do things. It's been an amazing experience to work with Coach and to see his excitement about the team and just his passion for racing and what he gives his teams to race with and how big of a part he is of it. He really, truly is the leader, and he's there every single day working on making his teams the best they can be. And, you know, to be part of that, it feels really good. It's been awesome so far, and hopefully I can deliver him some more race wins and hopefully some more championships.
You know, and you look at that team itself, right? With your arrival, the Joe Gibbs Racing team is absolutely loaded. You, Kyle Busch, Denny Hamlin, Eric Jones. I mean, what's the upside here? How good is this team?
I think it's great. I think we're going to be one of the teams to beat week in and week out. I feel like, you know, our driver lineup is strong. Crew chief lineup is strong. I think we have all the tools we need. And, you know, I've worked with Kyle and Denny and Eric the last, you know, few seasons as well and gotten to know them and, you know, through Toyota. And it's been a good relationship. I feel like we have a lot of respect for each other. We work well behind the scenes. And at the same time, we can race hard on the racetrack. And, you know, so that's a good mix. That's a good combination of things we need to have a strong team. And And hopefully we can go out there and all get results.
Martin Truex Jr. is joining us. Daytona coming up this weekend. Now, you, of course, won the title in 2017, and then you came as close as you possibly could to repeating. When you look back on last season and everything you had to deal with on top of the challenge of repeating, what kind of thoughts do you have about last season?
Well, it was a great season. There's no question. We had some things get away from us here and there. I felt like we definitely, should have won more races. We were in position to win a handful more, and things just didn't quite work out. But I was really proud of what we did, with the news of our team going out of business and all those things looming. We were able to make a championship run. And, we came up, I think, just 20 laps short at Homestead of winning that race and backing up that title. So I think to be able to put all that together and do that and not the perfect world of circumstances or scenarios says a lot about the character of our guys, and it was just it was a special team to be a part of, and it's something that I'll certainly never forget.
It's a really good point, right? If you don't know exactly what's going to happen or how it's going to play out or what's going to happen to the team, how are you able to get that mental focus and to make sure that you locked in and shut out everything else every single time you got into the car? How are you able to do that?
That's just what we had to do. That's what we were faced with. And, again, it's we had a great team, a lot of great people on it. And we all looked at each other when the news came out and said, hey, we're not going to let this change what we do and who we are. And we're going to go out there and do everything we can to try to back up this championship. So I wish we could have got it done. It was kind of bittersweet ending to that era of racing with Furniture Row and all that meant to me. And, team owner Barney Visser was an amazing guy, gave us a lot, and I wish we could have delivered. But we didn't get it done, and this year we have another opportunity, hopefully, to get back in that position and do a little bit better.
Martin, talking to you right now, I'm struck by something, and you've heard this before, but the suggestion that maybe that, if possible, you're actually maybe too nice a person and too clean of a driver. I know you've heard this before, but you've made the point also, look, we're going to race the right way. There's a right way, and we're going to race the right way. If you do that, is there any concern that guys will take advantage of that? And why is it important to you to race the right way and not take that win at all cost mentality when you hit the track?
Well, I've thought about it a lot, and I think about it, from time to time and, throughout the years, and I've always felt like doing it the right way is my way, and it's the right way to do it. Certainly times are changing, things are changing, the way people are approaching these races change, and I'm kind of getting sick and tired of being on the bad end of these things, so I have thought about it, and I'll make adjustments when needed. But I grew up watching my dad race and working on race cars and building my own cars, and I'll be honest with you, Jim, we didn't have a lot when I was racing as a kid, and if I wrecked it, I had to fix it. And, that's just the way it was. And I kind of, obviously, I don't do that anymore. I don't work on my own cars. I don't build them like I used to. But it was just something that was instilled in me at an early age, was, work hard and respect the other competitors and take care of your equipment, because it costs money and you got to fix it. So maybe I need to look at being a little bit meaner on the racetrack, and certainly is something I've considered. And this season, with the rules changes and the cars being different and all that's going on with that, there's definitely going to be opportunities to do that, and we'll see how it plays out.
I get that. I appreciate that response. Martin, I wonder the one thing about that. If you do it the way you've always done it, and you've done it the right way, is there a feeling, though, that because I do it this way and I do it the right way, man, I've earned everything and every win I've ever had because I've done it the right way?
Well, there's no question. Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know that, if I just ran somebody over to win a race, I don't know that I would feel satisfied. I don't know if I would feel like I actually won. I would feel like I cheated, So that's just, for me, I've never won a race by running into somebody my whole career, not even in a go-kart when I was a kid. So it's like, I don't know how I would feel, and I don't know if I'd be able to live with myself, to be honest with you.
I respect that a lot. Martin Truex Jr., my guest. All right, so last month you had the privilege of meeting the legendary Flyers mascot, Gritty. And that's something we'd all want. You actually did so. What was that moment like? Did it live up to the hype? Is it what you imagined it would be?
It surpassed the hype. It surpassed what I thought. It was amazing, a fun experience. He was really fun, and just crazy how funny he was and how good of a time we had together. We took a few pictures. I was up in the grandstands with him. He gave me a jersey, which was really cool, Flyers jersey with my number on it. And then he had me do the Macarena with him, which was kind of embarrassing, but at the same time, kind of fun.
Got to do it. Good times. He is the driver of the number 19 car for Joe Gibbs Racing. You've got the Daytona 500. Of course, NASCAR kicks off its season on Sunday with its Super Bowl event. It is the 61st Daytona 500. It is 2:30 p.m. Eastern on Fox. Martin Truex Jr., our guest. Martin, so great to get caught up. I appreciate you and the conversation. Good luck this weekend.
Thanks, Jim. Always good to talk to you. Take
care. You too. Class act. Martin, great talking to you. But I love that part of the conversation. I'm not going to run somebody over to get a win. He said, you know what? I'm getting kind of tired of being on the wrong end of these things all the time. I mean, isn't that the whole point? If somebody thinks they can take advantage of you, they will. But his point is, I'm not going to run somebody over to win because then I won't feel like I won. Felt like I cheated. The thing is, if you are the kind of person to run somebody over to win, you probably think you've earned it. And let me stop before you go there. He just said, I'm not going to run somebody over to win because I don't think I'd feel good about that. I'd feel like I cheated. Clones, I know what you think before you think it. I know what you tweet before you tweet it. I know what you email before you email it. So I don't want to see, hey, Rome, I'd run somebody over in order to win. Love the show, Rome. Signed, Smoke. Sorry. Oh, great, Rome. Yeah, man, I could just see you. I got this. I'm thumbing that out. Yeah, I know. That's my whole point. I know what you think before you think it. Especially garbage like that. Don't chase a class act in an amazing interview like that with some garbage like that. Calvin, who is this guy? Thank you. That was so great, the background. Hey, Rome, is that Rachel in Houston opening up down the backstretch there? Signed Mike Orr in Toronto. No, hold up. Back in the day, Rachel in Houston would emulate my but she did it much better. Just give me one. Give me one, and can you give me one in context, like Rachel saying it? Do you have that?
Well, the Rockets are in the second round. The godfather of the NBA, Greg Oden, and your boys.
It's incredible, right?
Man's game, bitch.
And then, hold up. Not only does she have a much better one than I've ever had, she chased that one with a man's game, bitch. Listen to Rachel.
Well, the Rockets are in the second round. The godfather of the NBA, Greg Oden, and your boys are at home. Man's game, bitch.
All right, she's fierce. Rachel's fierce. And then one day we got the idea to loop her errs together, and it sounded like the Daytona 500, did it not? Does that not sound like the Daytona 500? And then today, Martin Truex Jr. came on, and that was some of the best ambient sound we have ever had when having a NASCAR driver on the program. In fact, we've had all of them on, essentially, except Smoke, which is fine because if everybody wants to do the show, I'm not doing my job. But I don't think we've ever had that kind of ambient sound, that amazing sound that we just had. Can you reset that, Alvin? Can you pump that up at all? Let me think. It's coming. And don't
play
Rachel.
I'll be honest with you, Jim. We didn't have a lot when I was racing as a kid, and you know, if I wrecked it, I had to fix it.
Dude, come on.
You know, that's just the way it was.
It was good, but it was not that good.
Obviously, I don't do that anymore. I don't work on my own cars. I don't build them like I used to. But it was just something that was instilled in me at an early age.
I would say this: if there was ever a reason to drop that disclaimer at the end of that interview, it's with that guy. What a class act.
Good guy. Top performer.
They know what they're doing.
Respects the fans.
There's no better league to deal with than NASCAR.
Gives back, appreciates the sport, has time for the fans.
And NASCAR has won me over.
I like it. I get it.
They call on time. They do good interviews. They have good attitudes. It's big. It's not going away.
Good interview, shows up on time.
Every one of those guys is like that.
It won me over.
I will say for the record once again, I've done a 180.
He's not Tony Stewart. Rusty Wallace is my favorite guest. And if it's not Rusty Wallace, it's Clint Boyer and his bus driver, Curtis.
I did not break the pace car.
Carl Edwards, class act, Trevor Bayne. The best energy.
And I love Jeff Gordon.
I can't pick favorites, but Jimmy Johnson's my favorite. And Brad Keselowski is right there. Class act. Martin, great talking to you. And Martin Truex might be the nicest guy I've ever met in NASCAR. And I don't pick favorites. Jimmy Johnson's my favorite. Martin, the only thing that could have been better is if he had actually done the interview while in the middle of Daytona. And I wouldn't put it past him or them. NASCAR is amazing to deal with. All right, then. Short timeout. Still ahead. Got to talk some hockey. John Cooper, Tampa Bay Lightning head coach, joins me at 40 past. So the next segment is open. I may get my Jared Allen take in next segment. He is the star of EP69 of the Jim Rome podcast.
Come on, Jared!
And I did ask him about the Dillahunt. I played him the sound of the Dillahunt. His reaction was pretty priceless. All that's still ahead. Quick timeout. Hit me up. 1-800-636-8686. Last chance today to call the program. Do it now.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
See, the Celtics beat the Sixers again last night. Man, have had something to do with my man Joel F-bombing the officials after the game. That was wild. Peloton is a game-changing indoor cycling bike, which brings the energy of live studio classes right to your home anytime you want. Winter or summer, rain or shine, with the Peloton, it's always the perfect weather to sweat. Learn more at onepeloton.com. Like here in SoCal, it's going to rain any second now. Today is a perfect Peloton day. Perfect Peloton day. Glad I've got mine. All right, so last night, as I was getting ready for this show, getting my thoughts together, I was watching Duke Louisville. Actually, I was watching Louisville smashing Duke up by more than 20 in the second half. And I got to thinking about Chris Mack and how Chris Mack had worked a miracle in Louisville this year. Seeing his team take a 2x4 to Duke's face last night was Mack at the peak of his powers. That's a team that nobody really expected to do much of anything this year, beating the hell out of a team loaded with lottery picks. It was a blackout game for Louisville. The team was in their black gear at home. The fans were in their black. That was Duke's funeral. 38-29, Louisville at halftime. It only got worse from there. Duke came out and hit two of their first 17 shots in the second half. I mean, there's cold, and then there's that. And Zion was in foul trouble, and nobody else in a Duke jersey could do anything at all. With less than 10 minutes to go, they were down 59-36. 23 points. All right, so that's not losing. That's getting humiliated. That's getting embarrassed. Then Zion goes to the bench with his fourth foul with 12:41 left in the game. The crowd's freaking out. Zion's pissed. Zion says, quote, "I'm not going to lie. I was very frustrated. I don't know if this is cheesy or corny, but when I was on the bench, I heard my mom in the stands. She said, it's okay. Be you. When you get back in, make them pay," end quote. You know, I'd say that is cheesy or corny if we're anybody other than Zion. And he did make them pay. With Mama in his dome, he comes back in with 9:41 left in the game and proceeded to completely change that game and in the process, rewrite history. Because that was supposed to be the best win of the Chris Mack era. Instead, that was the greatest comeback of the Coach K era. It's a pretty damn long era, right? Coach K, we're talking about the guy with the most career wins in Division I college basketball. And he's never come back from 23 down in the final 10 minutes. So when you're making Coach K history, you're making real history. And that's the thing. K told his team in a timeout with more than 11 minutes to go that they were going to win. But even he didn't believe that. I mean, it's just something you say. He said, quote, "At that point, I may have been telling them a lie." And then he chased that with, quote, "I was hoping we wouldn't lose by 35. I'm not kidding," end quote. And I get that. I mean, they were on their way to losing by 35 or more. They're going up against a top 25 team in its own house who jumped them and started to beat on them with a lead pipe. That night could not have been going any worse for Duke. So last night was supposed to be the night that Duke's youngsters were exposed. Last night was supposed to be the game where they were humiliated on the road. And then weeks from now, we'd look back on it and say, they grew from that. Their season turned on that. But they didn't wait. They didn't wait a few days. They didn't wait a few weeks. They didn't wait to grow from that moment. They did it in the moment. And they did it in the moment with moments like this.
Zion the rebound for Duke. A chance to cut it to single digits. Zion going to the rim. Bank it up and in! And a chance for three!
Thanks to Learfield! And then there was this.
A chance to tie with a three. Barrett between the legs to Reddish to tie. Bang!
Learfield again! Cam Reddish to tie it! Except Louisville still had a shot now. Louisville still had a shot.
Off of a screen, it's Cunningham. Gets inside, behind the back. Fadeaway, jumper, no good. Zion fights for the rebound. He's got it! And that'll do it! The Blue Devils roar back from 23 down.
My man's awesome. And so is Zion. Of course, it was Zion there to end it. Coming back from down 23 on the road is incredible. And yeah, some of that's on Louisville for picking a horrible time to play some horrible basketball. But this is not about that. This is about Duke!
Bang!
And Zion! Yes, Duke switching to a 2-2-1 press was huge. Cam Reddish was a monster from deep. And Jordan Goldwire had the biggest impact you'll ever see without actually scoring a bucket. But that doesn't matter if you don't have Zion. Bang!
That'll do it!
Because in the final 9 minutes, Zion, 9:41 exactly, Zion had 11 points, 4 boards, 3 steals, and a block shot. And he did it when it mattered most. If any of you had any doubt as to whether or not this guy's the first pick in this year's draft, whether or not he could be a guy to change an NBA franchise, pop that tape into your VCR, because he is that guy. Bang!
Bang!
You should have known before. You should have known when he was dominating one game after another, when he was hitting his head on backboards, blocking shots the way he did against Virginia. But last night was different than all of that. Last night was not about his freakish physical ability. Last night was about this guy's will, his drive, his heart. That stuff, you know, that does not show up on Twitter highlights. Last night was different. Last night was special. Oh, and somewhere in the game, he also did this quickly. Tyler Conway of Bleacher Report tweeted out a pic of Zion grabbing the ball so hard that it appeared to be deflating. He was deflating the ball with his fingers. Look at this picture if you're watching on CBS Sports Network. You tell me, is that a Photoshop or is that the strongest man in the world squeezing the air out of a basketball? There's your deflate gate. Bang!
Knocks it
down! I don't
want
to call the NCAA tournament mid-February, but if I had to say it right now, Duke's going to win. Last night was bigger than that. I mean, last night's even bigger than me calling my shot right now. Last night was different. Last night was the kind of performance that you remember for years to come, no matter what Duke does the rest of the way. Last night we saw history. Last night we were all witnesses. It felt damn good. Quoting the big dog himself, not to be cheesy, not to be corny, but normally when something seems too good to be true, it is. But not in Zion's case. Man, this dude is the real deal. Real deal. That was impressive.
Bank it up and in!
Bang!
Bang!
That dude's good. Learfield, if you need him.
And
when we come back, Tampa Bay Lightning head coach John Cooper is going to join us. Good to talk some hockey. That's coming up next. I need to hit that with some tea, yo. That's hard. That bang stuff's hard, dog.
Bang!
Here is your sports update. We always hit the ATP on Wednesday. Ask the Pros, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. You want to thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. I will double back to that in a minute, but really eager to do this. We're going to talk some hockey right now. Not just hockey, but Tampa Bay Lightning hockey. We are joined by the head coach. Sixth full season with the Lightning. Longest tenured head coach in the NHL. led Tampa Bay to 4 playoff appearances and an Eastern Conference championship. Importantly, played his college lacrosse at Hofstra. Tampa Bay is in first in the Atlantic. They're at home against Dallas tomorrow. John Cooper is their head coach. He joins us. John, really nice to have you on the show. How are you?
Great, thanks, Jim. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you, John. So you're coming off a 6-3 win over Calgary last night where Nikita Kucherov had a goal and 3 assists. Let me start there. He's up to 88 points on the season. It leads the league. What is it about him and his game that makes him so special?
First of all, he's got elite talent, and he's I don't know. I don't want to sound cliche-ish or anything like that, but he truly is a guy that sees it. Like when he's going on a defender, he knows what the defender's going to do before the defender does. And then it translates into his offensive game as well, is he knows where to go and where the plays are going to develop, like 2 or 3 steps ahead. And so when he's doing that, you know, it's called hockey sense. I guess in the circles, and it's off the charts. And so it's like a student in class. There's A students, B students, C students, and unfortunately there's a couple Fs. He's an A-plus student.
John Cooper's joining us. Now, before the game, you talked about wanting to see if your guys could play a disciplined game against the Flames instead of that track meet-style game from the last meeting. What did you make of the way your guys showed up last night?
Well, if you saw the last game, it was one of those, if there was going to be 30 shots in the game, there's going to be 29 goals. And it was just one of those, no attention to detail on the defensive side. And one of the big things for us, we'd gone out west and we'd had a bunch of these kind of 6-5 games. And although entertaining for the fans, you know, on the coaching side of things and how to win in the spring when it really counts, you can't be in all those games all the time. And so big thing for us was, okay, we're going to play against a big offensive team that can score goals. How are we going to handle that? And, you know, a little disappointing. We gave up the third last night on a power play rush, but overall we really limited them. And because of the way we played D, it really actually generated a lot of our offense for us. And, you know, it turns into a 6-3 win.
Tampa Bay Lightning head coach John Cooper is my guest. You mentioned attention to detail. You know, one of the things that seems clear from watching you and the way you've kind of evolved since you got into the league is your attention to detail, how much preparation you put into everything that you do. So how much have you grown and evolved as a coach since when you first entered the NHL?
Oh, wow. A ton. And it's funny. You come into the NHL, you go... You know, I coached high school and junior and 3 years in the American League. And, you know, you're starting to see things again. And then you go in and you're like, okay, I'm ready. I know it all. And the longer I was in the NHL, I found out how actual little I knew. And it's been a constant evolution through the years of trying to get better, trying to challenge myself. I really didn't, you know, look for a lot of outside help when I was coming up. And now, you know, in the 6 years, I hired somebody from the Navy SEALs to come and work with us for the last 2 years so he could challenge myself because, you know, in a lot of areas, you know, coaches coach the players, coaches coach the trainers and everybody, but in reality, who coaches the coach? And so to make myself better, I started to try and bring people in to help me and help guide like leadership and different areas of what I knew. And then the other big thing was, it is a head coach in the NHL. There's so much more than the X's and O's. It's probably, you know, the least amount of, you know, you coach the game, but you need to have, it's pivotal. You have unbelievable assistants. And I think, you know, this, especially this year with the guys we brought in, they've done so much for me. And, you know, I'm the one that, you know, is on the Jim Rome show and people are hearing my voice, but if it was not for my assistants, it wouldn't be this situation. That's how valuable they are. And for me, that's just been a huge learning curve to get, you know, to grow with good people helping you.
John Cooper joining us. John, this is why I've been wanting to talk to you for a long time. There's a lot to unpack there, a lot of good stuff in there. I love that notion that, yeah, well, who's going to coach the coach? The coach is always bringing people to talk to the players, but who's the one who coaches the coach? There's a fascination. I've got the same thing, John. There's a fascination, I think, with a lot of us about Navy SEALs. And I've known SEALs. I've tried to connect with SEALs. I don't know if you want to protect the confidentiality of that SEAL, but, like, who is that that you deal with? And even if there's not a name, what do you get from that?
Well, believe it or not, what they do is very similar to what we do. It's just the stakes are way higher. And when the other bonus is when you get to watch a war movie, you get to find out actually how much of it's true. But in all seriousness,
right,
they it's all about team, and like how they, you know, they have an ethos, and that's well known. You can go on the internet and read that, but how it went from, because in the 90s, or maybe I'm getting the dates wrong, but the Navy SEALs weren't as respected as they are now, and they changed their whole culture. And those guys there, we went out to Coronado last year. We brought our team out there. They were phenomenal. I can't say enough about the discipline, the way these guys train, but how they all do it together. And that's what you have to do as a team. Like when you've got somebody going off the rails a little bit, whatever it is, like you, if you don't reel him in, like you have to move on from him. And sometimes that may be the best player you have. And it's the same in the SEALs. It's all about teamwork, and it's all about working together. And they're some of the parts instead of, you know, just somebody being single out there. And that's how I truly believe teams are made. And, you know, in hockey and other sports, it's all about role. And you need to have somebody, yes, you need to have a Kucherov that's going to get you the points. You need to have a Stamkos and a Braden Point. But you need to have, like, the Ryan Callahans of the world, the guys that understand they're going to play 10 minutes, but they're going to give you everything they have. And they understand they're going to sit on the bench, be called on 3 or 4 times in a game, but when they are going to deliver for you. And it's very much of that Navy SEAL attitude, and that's why I respect those guys so much.
We're talking to John Cooper. It's so well said. I mean, it's very clear how you are where you are right now, but not as clear if you don't know the background, John. Now, you grew up in Prince George, British Columbia. You played prep school hockey in Saskatchewan. So how in the world did you get from playing hockey in Western Canada to playing college lacrosse in New York?
Well, it's kind of it's a very complimentary sport. So in Canada, you play box lacrosse. So very similar to hockey rink, 5 guys on the side. And it was really, really big. And that would be the sport I'd play in the spring, play hockey in the winter. And I really went to Notre Dame and Wilcox, Saskatchewan, to go and fulfill my dreams as a hockey player. You leave your town, you're like, you know, the good player in your town. And then when I went there, I found out, oh, wow, maybe I'm not as good as I thought I was. First time I'd ever been cut from a team when I went there. So it was a big growing experience for me. But I happened to be a pretty good lacrosse player as well. And when I couldn't sustain or get a scholarship for hockey, I turned to lacrosse and doors opened for me there. And I had a wonderful career at Hofstra when I was there. And it was such a great experience playing college sports. And you know, it wasn't hockey, but lacrosse was awesome for me. But hockey was always my true love, and I was always in the background going to go back to it. And I thought when I went to law school, I was going to be an agent. And I dipped my toes in the water a little bit, but I just didn't really like it. And then, you know, if you've read before, I met a judge, and I was trying to get a job in Michigan. And basically, he hired me to be a defender in his court if I coach his kid's high school team. And that's how it all started.
That's incredible. That's the abridged version. That's an amazing thing. You kind of glossed over that. You went to law school in Michigan, and you approached a judge about becoming a public defender. And the judge made you a deal that if you coached his son's hockey team in high school, you could become a public defender. So then you're practicing law and you're coaching hockey. You get an opportunity in the NAHL in Texas, which meant you had to make a decision. You keep working your way up. You get to the AHL, and then you get the call from Steve Yzerman, who offered you the head coaching job at Tampa Bay. What do you remember about that call?
Well, it was, I'll tell you, so the initial call I got from Julian Breezebois, who coincidentally is my general manager now, took over for Steve. They asked me to come interview, and I'm like, holy, this is craziness. So I'd been in Green Bay, and I loved it there, and coaching, like, 100 yards from Lambeau Field. It was awesome. Anyway, I go on the interview because somebody told me, hey, don't burn any bridges. Make sure you go on this. It's good to meet people. So they fly me down there, and I do remember sitting outside Eisenman's office, and there's the little sign that says Steve Yzerman. It's kind of a little nervous inside. And then he lets me in, and there he's standing up, and he's like, hey, John, nice pleasure to meet you. My name's Steve Yzerman. And that was my OS moment where I was like, yeah, no, I understand who you are. And he was, but he was the most humble, nicest guy ever. Like, you know, you're intimidated going in there. And then it just turns out he's like, you know what? He puts his pants on the same way I do. He's just a regular guy that is, just happens to be one of the best hockey players to ever play. But what was money about him was his mind. Like he thinks it through, and he was as good a hockey player as he was on the ice. He's just like that off the ice. And it's no coincidence he's been an Unreal general manager.
I mean, John, one of the best players ever, and certainly I know you'd agree with this, one of the greatest leaders in any sport, Stevie Eiserman. I got to ask then, John, what's it like to know that you are the longest tenured head coach in the NHL? I mean, this whole journey is so amazing, from Prince George to Hofstra to practicing law to coaching high school hockey to being where you are right now, the longest tenured coach in the NHL. Does it feel absolutely crazy, or does it feel kind of real and normal to you?
It probably the former, a little bit more crazy, because it was this league, it's so hard to get into this league, let alone to stay in it. And you have to have so many things go your way. And you need so many people to help you out. And that's exactly what happened to me. And it was, it's funny, when I was in the American Hockey League, and we had a wonderful run in 2012, and we ended up winning the Calder Cup. So at the time, you know, my name was, quote unquote, it was kind of hot at the time. And so for me, somebody who didn't play in the NHL, I'm sitting there thinking, well, this is my crack. Like, you don't know how many chances you're going to get into the league. So we'd won the Calder Cup, and I'd interviewed with Washington and Edmonton. And I went to multiple interviews, somewhat confident I might get one of those jobs. But deep down inside, I knew I wasn't ready. But you got it. When the door opens, you got to walk through it. And I didn't get either one of those jobs. And it turned out the next year I went back and worked for Tampa again and the American League. And by the end of the year, that's when I got the call to come to the NHL. And I truly believe if I'd gone to one of those other two places, I may not be in the league still today. I can't say that for sure, but I do know that the fact I got to stay with Tampa, grow up in the organization with the players I was had, and to have Steve and Julian as my general managers really made it comforting for me and their belief in me growing up, and I think that's why I'm still here today.
It is an amazing story with an amazing background, John. Like I mentioned, I've been wanting to have this conversation for a long time. I really appreciate you finding time for it, and we had this conversation finally. Really good to have you on the show, John. Thanks so much. Tell me we can do it again soon.
You must be popular because I got a bunch of text messages from all over the country saying, you're going to Jim Rome show? This is unbelievable. So you're obviously reaching a lot of people.
My man, for you and me both, that's great. That's great. I was getting a lot of texts also from people saying, you got John Cooper on? I do. Great to have you, John. Thanks so much. Let's do it again soon.
All right. See you, Jim.
Well done. God, what a great story. And then there are guys with great stories, but they're not great at telling their great story, and it's not their fault. Not everybody's a natural storyteller. He was great telling a great story. And if you have a guy who's got a great story, who's really good at telling that story, and then you got a guy like my man Brian with the Lightning who makes that happen, it's all good.
I love when you talk hockey.
Right? We love talking hockey. Bella B, you know I always will. I love the NHL. And I did the best I could in the time constraints to tell that story. His story is amazing. He played college lacrosse. Not only did he not play in the NHL, he didn't play college hockey. And he's the longest tenured coach in the NHL. And they're in first. Great personality. And he has established an amazing culture. And Stevie Eiserman, great job to find him. That's it. We are done. That was a fun Wednesday. Roger in Mass would have won the huge call if I'd gotten there. My thanks to John Cooper and the Tampa Bay Lightning for making that happen. Martin Truex Jr., the driver of the number 19 car, coming in right before Daytona. And my man Ross Tucker, who's having an amazing career. Ross, couldn't be more proud of you, bro. XR4TI, somewhat proud of you all. Not you, Hawk. I got to get out. See you tomorrow. We're done.
And that'll do it!